Hello, and welcome to Resistance Airways. My name is Kensington, and I'll be your attendant for this flight. The emergency exits are... Sorry, yeah, we don't have any, actually. Once you become a Resistance buff, there is no going back. But on the plus side, the in-flight movie is Casablanca, and you can use Terry Walton's The Grand Recruitment as a flotation device. This is our third episode, and it's probably going to be a bit shorter this time, I think. We'll be veering slightly, meaning entirely, off the history track, and do a little number I like to call a Resistance podcast? Surely you jest. No, I'm quite serious, and stop calling me Shirley. I thought now that we're off and running, it'd be okay to do an info show about the podcast. This is the sort of episode most people do first, and some people do last, and sometimes those are the same people. I didn't want this to be one of those shows that's gone before it even happens, so I thought we should reach cruising altitude before doing this. First off, now that we're here, I noticed that I talked too quickly in the first episode and too archly in the second. For that, I apologize. To try and Goldilocks the third, I'm adding a component that is integral to some of my favorite podcasts, namely liquor. Will Write for Wine puts it right in the title, and the Napoleon podcast wouldn't dare stage an invasion without it. In those spirits, I'd like to say that tonight I'm recording this with the aid of a fine 2008 red from Target. It's a sangria that, for cheap, on-the-go drinkers like me, is helpfully dispensed in a red juice box. Cheers. Now, question I've been asked most is, why a Resistance podcast? Well, for starters, whenever anyone asks me why the Resistance, I'm always genuinely surprised at the question. I know it's the same thing I ask when I meet people who are just mad about something else, anything else really, but some part of my mind thinks, how can you not be? How is this not clearly the most fascinating subject in the history of time and space? As soon as I got into podcasting, I immediately started looking for what I was sure was going to be a trove of Resistance-related goodies. As you normal folks can probably guess, yeah, not so much. I was so surprised every time I went looking on some new site and couldn't find anything. After a fair bit of time spent whining about this, I finally just decided to put up or shut up. It was also inspired by a used bookshop on my local main drag. Every time I find something on the subject after trolling their World War II section, their cashier, every time, reminds me that the French Resistance didn't liberate their country single-handed. To which I always want to reply, who said they did? Or, who said they had to? A group of underground, underfunded, non-regular army volunteers overthrowing the Third Reich? Blimey, you don't expect much, do you? No, I've never heard anyone say the Resistance saved France. Except maybe if they were talking about saving the honor of their country, or the integrity. And if someone had said it, I'm the sort of person who might have bumped into it by now. But I've never heard it. In fact, I've heard it flat-out denied when Raymond Albrecht was asked that very question in the documentary Great Escapes of World War II. The Resistance was a committed, courageous, and cunning group of people whose idea of freedom and sense of country was greater than their sense of self. But did they save that country all on their own? No, they did not. Instead, they only justified the creation of the human race. I work in the entertainment industry, and one thing I've learned is that a major function of the arts is to remind us who and what we are, of the impossibility of there being an animal capable of both rational thought and the irrational impulse to sacrifice oneself for a higher calling. In the crucible of a theater, all the petty distractions are burned away from our mind to give us a few perfect moments to reflect on what criteria the human race is to be judged by. Because it is a race. No one dropped the ball in naming it that. Its finish line is crossed by integrity, by staring down fear, and by devotion to something greater than ourselves. Welcome to every story or song written about anything ever. There are, admittedly, other subjects, popular subjects, but they don't make your blood boil, do they? It's the stories about doing impossible good that stick with us, because at the end of the day, the only unique thing we as a species are capable of is sacrifice. Big sacrifices, little sacrifices. Over and over, our spare time and a lot of our spare money go to the things that remind us of our potential, of our ability to stomp our foot down so hard that for a split second, the world has to revolve around us. But that trick only works when we see the big picture and understand the tiny but vital role we can play in it. It's true that everywhere you look, there are people who seem to just want to be on the winning team. But does anybody ever make a movie about them? Okay, well, yeah, actually, yes. Yes, they do. But most people never think they're the guy in the shield. Instead, we think we're like, or could be like, the astronauts who braved dangers we couldn't imagine for the sake of exploration. We think we're the heroes of rock songs, defying authority, fighting back against the 100 little tyrannies of the day. We're the plucky band of outsiders holding a shot of freedom together with spit and duct tape, saying things like, that plan's so crazy, it just might work. We're V for Vendetta, browncoats, underdogs. We are Spartacus. We'd lay down our life for our friend. This is where the arts come in, to remind us of the things we could see every day if we had lots of free time and knew exactly where to look. Sure, we can be merely entertaining. Although to anyone who thinks being entertaining is a mere thing, I say, try it sometime. There's no mandate that says every character must die bellowing freedom. But the reason we as creators and spectators come back to this idea time and time again is because it's that most fascinating of all objects. It's a mirror. It's what we are. It's fundamental. Elemental. There's a reason one of the stories told over and over again is the amnesiac remembering who he is and what he's capable of. He's us. We have an innate urge to be reminded of all we've accomplished, and all that still remains within our power to do. Like all mirrors, charming and brutal, this idea only tells the truth. It exists so often in life that we could never tell all its incarnations. So every now and then, usually in science fiction, we go meta. We tell a story about how this must make us look to outside observers. These judgment stories usually come to rest in the same place, that Solar 3 may not be a remarkable place when judged against the entirety of the cosmos, but its animals are unique. We're not distinguished by greed or logic, or even by our love. What distinguishes us in the long run is our ability to believe in and die for something greater than ourselves. That is the human race in a nutshell. When the world is quiet, we go looking for trouble. We've literally raced ourselves into the void. And on those days that end in Y, when we've already got enough trouble, we give it trouble right back. It's not comfortable or easy. Often it's not for our own sake or our own glory. We live and die, and usually no one notices. But we die early, freely, and often for the sake of tomorrows we volunteer to never see. We die for ideas. What other species in the universe is capable of writing the words, "How can man die better than in facing fearful odds for the ashes of their fathers and the temple of their gods?" For that matter, what other species is capable of agreeing with them? That's the legacy the arts remind us is ours for the claiming. It's a legacy left to us by saints and soldiers, our freedom fighters, our founding fathers, our famous fools. The repetitive nature of these insurrections shows this programming runs deeper than mere software. It runs down to the hardware, down to the bone. For on the sixth day God created man in his own image, and blessed them, and said unto them, "This plan's so crazy it just might work." So, no, the resistance did not liberate France all by their lonesome. But they are part of the only thing that makes being human something worth putting on a resume. They're part of an eternal line of those who give truth to Hemingway's bold assertion that the world is a fine place and worth saving. So they've got that going for them, which is nice. Finally, as for how I got into all of this, it's not a very interesting answer, to be honest. I suspect you could guess it like as not. So instead, I'll read something that matches what I felt when I discovered it. This is an extract from Julian Green's Paris, a cartographic book of memory. This particular moment is a stormy late afternoon in the 1930s, and while running errands, he finds himself driven by the city noise to the mysterious quiet of the Rue de Beaujolais. I felt I was on the threshold of a new country, whose name figured in no book, and where everything we think of as belonging to the material world was by some elusive mechanism becoming the tangible aspect of the inner world. I had the feeling of suddenly slipping behind the scenes of reality, coming upon a secret. My hand brushed against one of the white columns, and I took a few paces forward. I was advancing not so much in space as in memory, and not so much in the memory of my own life as in the scattered recollections of a whole race of men. Like someone experiencing a hallucination, I went over and placed my face between the bars of the gate, the gilded tips of which shone brightly against a threatening sky. It was toward that somber sky, now turning from gray to lilac, that my gaze was drawn. I could glimpse it between the tiny leaves, still shy in their greenness, that shivered in the first gusts of the storm. One by one the birds fell silent. Soon I was the only one left observing the inky clouds that unfurled above the rooftops amid the solemn murmur of the wind. Suddenly, in that moment that precedes the first clap of thunder, when everything seems to be listening attentively for the initial roll, I was taken out of myself, as it were, and handed over to an invisible crowd. Countless thoughts went flooding through my mind like waves crashing on the shore with a sort of violent tenderness. The sound of an entire city entered into the cries, sighs, and guffaws of the storm gathering above my head, and my heart began to beat in unison with that great joy so full of anger and alarm. Countless thoughts went flooding through my mind like a wave crashing on the shore with a sort of violent tenderness. It was as if the dull rumble of the sky was being answered by a distant voice issuing from the depths of time. I listened motionless. Then a long line of fire split the sky from end to end, and amid the din that almost immediately ensued, the rain came lashing down on the ancient garden. I heard it with delight. Until next time, vive la Resistance.